Welcome to VOA's live coverage of the ABC presidential debate, which is about to begin a little under 30 minutes from now. Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump are squaring off the first time they've seen each other face to face. This could be their only, one and only debate, which is taking place in the U.S. East Coast city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. With me tonight here in our Washington, D.C. studios is VOA Africa in Brief host Chinedu Afor. Thanks, Chinedu, for being here. On the line with us is Wendy Schiller, Interim Director of the Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs and Political Science Professor at Brown University in Rhode Island. Yetunde Omede is Professor of Global Affairs and Politics at Farmingham State College in New York. She's also here with us on the line, as is Republican strategist Charlie Giroux, who's been a Pennsylvania delegate at every single Republican National Convention since Ronald Reagan in the 1970s. And then last but not least, Todd Belt, professor and director of George Washington University's Political Management Master's Program. Welcome, and thanks to all of you for joining us tonight. Let's start with a brief conversation I had a little while ago with VOA's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman, in Philadelphia right now, who says the prep work of these two candidates has been dramatically different in getting ready for tonight's debate.
From what we've heard from the respective campaigns, Kamala Harris, this is going to be her first general election presidential debate, has been preparing intensively with mock debates, including a Donald Trump stand-in. The former president, however, does not seem to have been doing any formal debate preparation, and he comes into this as the experienced debater. This will be his seventh presidential debate.
Yeah, and they both seem to have very, very different styles in terms of, you know, how these debates are carried out. Just how important is this debate for both candidates?
Well, arguably, Kamala Harris has more at stake than Donald Trump. Pretty much every voter in the United States is familiar with Trump because he was president for 4 years and he's running for president for the third consecutive time. Kamala Harris, however, according to pollsters, about 30% of the voters say they want to know more about her. The vice presidency in the United States is not necessarily a very high-profile role. Before that, she was a U.S. senator and was well-known in California, but not in the rest of the country. So there's really a burden on Harris to put herself across to the voters and convince that small sliver of independent voters that they should vote for her. And I think just as important for both of these candidates is the fact that there are always a percentage of voters who don't go to the polls because they don't feel very motivated. So Donald Trump is going to want to motivate his base. Kamala Harris is going to want to motivate the Democratic Party base. And both of them are going to try to reach those very small, relatively number of independent, undecided voters.
I suppose it's also about, it's a very small number of undecided voters, but it's also about getting out the people who may just decided that they were going to sit it out, right? I mean, and Kamala Harris in particular trying to win over more women.
Correct. And that's where some of the political analysts and pollsters believe that Kamala Harris may have a slight advantage because among Democrats and independent voters, there wasn't that great of an enthusiasm for President Joe Biden, especially after his disastrous debate performance against Donald Trump. And at least initially, with Kamala Harris replacing Biden in the race, there's definitely been more enthusiasm observed. And as you point out, that issue of getting women out to the polling places and the campaign of Donald Trump and J.D. Vance seem to have made comments about abortion and lifestyle that may make it a little bit difficult for them to sway some of these female voters that have been sitting on the fence.
That is VOA Steve Herman speaking with me about an hour ago from Philadelphia.
Hi, Professor Yetunde. This is Chinedu Afor here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. With less than 2 months until the election, a lot is riding on this debate. A recent Washington Post Ipsos poll shows that the likelihood of black Americans to vote this fall has rebounded since Harris replaced President Joe Biden as the Democratic nominee, with black voters coalescing around her candidacy as opposed to being lukewarm over Biden. The poll says over 1,000 black Americans finds that 69% say they are, quote, absolutely certain to vote, unquote, in November, up from 62% in April. Now, is this part of a broader trend of multicultural voters getting on board with a Harris-Walz ticket?
Hi, Yetunde, you there?
Yes, I'm here. I hear noise in the background.
Yeah, there was a lot of noise because we've got like four people on the line.
You want me to repeat that, or did you get a question?
Sure, yeah. So we're looking at the rising in the percentage of black voters, including young women under 30. We're seeing a surprising turnout in terms of their commitment to possibly casting their vote for the presidential nominee, Vice President Harris. And since her announcement of her being the Democratic nominee presidential pick, we have seen a rise in the black commitment vote, right, to her party. We're also seeing that she's trying to garner that multicultural vote that former President Obama was able to capture during his election season. So now we're seeing her sort of coalesce around various fragments of the diaspora vote. The African diaspora vote is very, very critical here in the United States. She's also looking at different pockets of the multicultural vote, such as those from the Caribbean who have ancestry and ties there. And so she has to focus a lot of her campaign rhetoric to these various groups who can't just be cast as only black votes. Inside of the black votes are various groups of people, right, who have allegiance, who have ties to their culture and to their background, and she has to speak to those different needs of those constituents, right? So even in Florida, right, we have a high number of those who are from the Caribbean background. She has to also speak to their needs. We have a lot of Nigerian Americans here, right, who have also shown some form of commitment to her campaign. She has to also speak to those needs. So although we do see a rise in the black vote, she has to be very, very, meticulous and also specific in how she, campaigns and who she targets her messaging to, and to be able to understand what the constituencies and their needs and their concerns. I think that would also push her further ahead. But we're seeing a high turnout in the black vote, especially young women under 30, and also a rise in young voting.
Okay.
As a direct, yes.
Yeah, thanks, Yetunde. Charlie, I want to ask you a question. The Republican Party seemed transformed after the attempted assassination in July when Donald Trump was slightly injured 2 days before the Republican National Convention got underway, just 2 days. And all his former challengers then stood behind him, including South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, the last holdout. Delegates on the floor seemed really confident of a Trump victory back then. And then, of course, a few weeks later, Biden passed the torch to his vice president, and she has been steadily climbing, as Tony just pointed out, in the polls ever since. You're a longtime observer of U.S. elections. How much weight should we give to polls at this point?
Well, the national polls are always going to be a little bit suspect because Republican candidates, including Donald Trump, don't do terribly well nationally. But where they do well are in the states that matter, the so-called battleground states that will form the electoral map that puts you in the White House. And that's where Donald Trump continues to do very, very well, although now the national polls that are out just recently show it essentially a dead heat. I think it is going to be a very, very close election. It wasn't going to be if Joe Biden had been on the ballot, but frankly, any other Democrat would have done much better than Joe Biden. So nothing here is very surprising, and I thought your correspondent laid the effect of tonight's debate out very, very well. I think it is, potentially pivotal, and the onus is on Kamala Harris because she's flip-flopped all over the place on positions, and a lot of people are saying we don't really know where she stands. So tonight she's going to have to make the case that she truly does have some gravitas and some mooring to her positions.
And Wendy, what are some of the hot button issues for most Americans this year, and where do Harris and Trump come down on these issues, do you think?
Well, I think that inflation, the same issues that Donald Trump, you know, really attacked Joe Biden on in the last debate, inflation, border security, and abortion. And abortion is intense in some parts of the country, including some swing states like Arizona, where it will be on the ballot. So I think that's the whole problem with the polls is that, you know, you do a national poll, it doesn't really measure the intensity of people on particular issues. And so border security tends to be an issue that is more intense in southern border states, although we've seen lots of issues in northeastern states, for example, with migrants. But nonetheless, people care about what's near to them, what affects them close by. And that's the challenge in Kamala Harris's debate performance tonight. How does she reach various different people on a range of issues? She supports reproductive rights. She now says that she's very supportive of strong border security. And she can make a claim that the Biden administration has now lowered inflation considerably from its peak, 8 or 9%, and now it's, you know, somewhere between 2 and 3%. So she'll want to claim that now the Biden administration has done what it needs to do on inflation. And, you know, it'll be up to Trump to really sort of hammer her on that and not let her establish sort of a victory lap on the economy.
Todd, what's going to be the strategy of Kamala Harris tonight? What has she got to do to, you know, win over the people that she's, you know, going to need to get over that 2 to 3% margin of error, you know, area that's gray? And what is Trump going to try to do tonight?
Well, you're absolutely right that she's going to try to do what she needs to do, which is she needs to show that she is ready and has the experience to step in as commander-in-chief. She has to show people that she is going to be a strong, committed president, but she also needs to be the opposite of Donald Trump. What really got some people upset about Donald Trump was his behavior, his temperament. Now, with the mics off tonight and no fact-checking from the moderators and no crowd, he might appear a little bit more presidential than he otherwise might. So Harris is going to try to get him off his game and try to create a contrast both in style and substance. I think she's really going to try to put out a bit more policy detail and try to undermine some of Donald Trump's really, frankly, very, very simplistic policy views like tariffs curing everything, which, of course, they don't, and other things. So she needs to do that. She needs to continue to energize young voters and voters of color, the groups that she won back in the polls since we've seen Joe Biden drop out. And, you know, she just has to avoid a mistake as well. I mean, obviously it's said that a presidential debate can lose you the race. It may not necessarily win it for you, but we don't have to go back any further than Joe Biden to see that. So she wants to make sure that she doesn't have any slip-ups. And the last thing I'll say is that for the independents, many independents don't actually watch the debate. It's mostly people who are already committed to their candidate and they want to see how they're going to do. The people who are undecided generally get their information in the subsequent days to the debate in what we call the news verdict. And so that's why you see these candidates going for a zinger or a memorable moment that can be rebroadcast in the subsequent days to give sort of the tenor to what the debate actually was and to influence those independent voters in that way.
Now, Yetunde, a lot of analysts think the world is not in the best of places at the moment, especially when it comes to foreign policy. And, of course, the U.S. foreign policy comes into question. We are expecting some tough questions on Israel's continued offensive in Gaza and efforts to get a ceasefire with Hamas and the Russian-Ukraine war. What else do you think might come up when it comes to foreign policy?
I think we're looking at what a Kamala Harris, you know, presidency would be when it comes to foreign policy. We're looking at if she's going to make decisions that are in parallel to President Joe Biden, or she's going to make a swift U-turn when it comes to her stance on Russia-Ukraine, when it comes to her stance on actually getting a ceasefire and being an advocate for a ceasefire. But again, she brings her own distinct worldview, you know, to the job of being a global leader. And I also do think that as a daughter of immigrants and someone who has spent her career, you know, in law enforcement in California, I'm hoping that
her foreign policy has a more progressive and also outlook when it comes to dealing with world leaders and also trying to advocate for global peace. So we're going to see if she's going to embrace some form of multilateralism when it comes to U.S.'s primary role on the global stage. And we're going to see if her policies and her political ideologies are going to be really what we call, you know, changing the realities on the ground, or are we going to see something that has a more deeper emphasis on the core of American values, such as the rule of law and human rights, and particularly where it involves women. So we're looking to see, you know, what her agenda will be and if there are things that are going to be very distinctive or very different when it comes to her foreign policy and U.S. taking the global stage under her presidency, if she so gets it.
Yeah. Wendy, just how important is this debate, would you say, for both candidates tonight? It could be the one and only, right? Could it be a game changer?
Well, you know, normally in political science, you know, we all watch the debates and then we say, yeah, it didn't really move the needle on the actual electoral outcome. But we've seen already that a really important debate can have tremendous consequences for our campaign season with the withdrawal of Joe Biden and the replacement with Kamala Harris. So, you know, a major misstep would sort of maybe shake things up a little bit. But with Trump, you know, he was very disciplined in the debate against Biden. You have to expect going in he'll continue to be disciplined. So it's hard to imagine that either one of them really, you know, launches something that will really move the needle because we're so partisan. However, I do think there is room for Kamala Harris to grow in terms of her support, as the other panelists have been saying, because she is the less well-known candidate. And so if she says things, people say, oh, you know, I think I'm going to go with her. You know, essentially, stylistically, she just has to maintain her cool vibe, literally. And if she can do that, I think people say, hey, you know, that's the kind of politics I want. I want to reject the most negative politics that Trump can sometimes deliver. And that's the best, I think, the Harris campaign is hoping for.
And Todd, in previous presidential debates between President Biden and Trump, which looks like a lifetime now, and of course, we want to thank you. You were here with us that night. There was a lot of talk about style over substance. What do you think? Will substance rule this day in this debate?
Well, you know, it's always a good question, but style and substance are sometimes the same thing because you want somebody who not only comes off as calm, cool, and collected, but can be that way in their interactions with other foreign leaders and with other leaders in the United States and Congress and other governors. And that type of temperament is an actual aspect of substance. The personality and character of the individual is important. Now, of course, there's the theatrics of the debate, which is another concern altogether. But, you know, if you're trying to create those zingers or repeatable moments, it seems like those could be throwaway lines, but they can also be based on policy as well. If you remember back when Kamala Harris debated Joe Biden, her line was about busing and him flip-flopping about busing when she said, I was that little girl. So I think that it can be both style and substance, and I think that you don't have to peel it back too much to find some substance under the style sometimes.
Let me go back to Professor Yetunde. What would you be looking out for tonight? I mean, there are a lot of topics. What would stand out for you after this is all over?
Some of the things that are going to stand out to me is I want to see her stance on, you know, a real clear immigration policy. I want to hear what her stance is on foreign policy when it does come to Russia and Ukraine, and also I also do want to hear her economic policies when it comes to either tax alleviation. What is she doing when it comes to tax credits? And also, we also want to see her be really defined and definite in each of the policies she has outlined and has already released, but for her to go into concrete details and also speak to the American people. We want to see something that's a unifying message where people can see themselves in her representation and also in what she's saying. So I'm going to see how she connects to the American people, the diversity of the American people, and to be able to talk about these issues in a way that focuses solely on her agenda and not solely on attacking Trump. So we want to hear more of her agenda and less of the attack on Trump and how she feels about Trump, but more of what she can do for the American people.
Charlie, you know, Kamala Harris is trying to project herself as the change candidate. I know you're going to point out that, okay, well, she's been in this administration for 4 years, but, you know, Trump has had his own set of baggage, too, and such as the way he treats women and the way he's talked about women, the way he has talked about Kamala Harris in the past, you know, and calling her stupid and other things. So how are they going to counter each of their own, you know, issues that they're looking at right now and trying to, you know, smooth that over in this debate?
Well, first I'd like to, since this is only my second chance to speak tonight, to counter the less than veiled threats or suggestions that Donald Trump's policy initiatives are paper thin or something of that nature. I mean, Kamala Harris, up until yesterday, didn't even have a single policy position on her website. And then when her team finally put it up, it was discovered that it was cut and pasted from the Biden playbook. So she plagiarized even that. And I think that's going to be the sum and substance of tonight. How is she going to be able to tell the American people that she has any core sense of any of these policy initiatives where she's had a foot in both buckets on just about every one of them? I think it's a very, very tall challenge for her. And I do think the onus is on her to define all that. I mean, what the American people know about Donald Trump, as your correspondent suggested right up front, is, you know, pretty clear at this point. People know who he is, what he said, what he's done, and his support is locked in and growing. And people do not see her as a change agent. The recent polling clearly suggests that. The majority of the American people see Donald Trump as the person that can bring about change, not Kamala Harris. So I don't think Trump has to prosecute that case on his side tonight. I don't know how Kamala Harris will do that.
Well, what is a follow-up then to that? And since, you know, we do have four people talking, so it is hard to get back to everybody. But what would you say are Trump's strengths then?
Well, his strength is his strength. And ultimately, I think this campaign will boil down to strength against weakness. And Trump's positions are well-known, well-articulated. I think he's going to expand on them tonight. And I think that if he's able to remain disciplined, as your correspondent said right up front, and take the case to Kamala Harris that she has to define for the American people why she has changed her position on just about every single major position.
Well, I know that, like, some of the things that they've pointed out is fracking. She said that she was against it, and now she says she's not so against it. Is that's one of the things you're talking about?
That's just one. You know, the wall is another one, which she called immoral, un-American, and medieval, and now says she can accept the Green New Deal, the, you know, single-payer health care, the defunding of the police. I mean, just go right down the list. I mean, it's a multitude of issues that she has now changed her position on. And look, people are entitled to change their mind, but you're not necessarily entitled to change your mind on every single issue all within a month's time. And so I think people are going to expect and want to hear an explanation from Ms. Harris about why she has done that.
And Wendy, if you're still there, I have a question for you. Going into this debate, there was, both parties tried to lower expectation, and the Democrats were going into it trying and telling Vice President Kamala Harris to try and get under the skin of the former president. Will that be effective? And also a second question on immigration. Former President Trump talked about, and if I'm quoting him correct, the largest, you know, movement of immigrants from the United States. Is that resonating? And will that in some way scare some voters away from him, do you think?
I think she's got to sort of figure out how to turn the tables on him in this way. He has said he wants to deport, you know, 15 million people who are living here. I don't even know physically how you would get that accomplished. I mean, she's really got to take the statements that he's made and go right back at him. And, you know, he really, you know, he sort of towered over Hillary Clinton in 2016 in the debate, and he was walking around the stage kind of stalking her. She was trying to make her policy points, and he was sort of always in the frame of the picture. And he knows how to do that. He knows TV. So it is going back to style. I mean, yes, you know, you can't really explain your entire policy positions to everybody, but you really have to show that you can stand up to Donald Trump. much less the rest of the world.
Right.
And that's going to be a test for Kamala Harris tonight. I think in some ways Hillary Clinton failed, even though people thought she was articulate in the debate. It still seemed like he was the stronger of the two. And she's got to kind of show that strength. And she wants him to get so angry that he says something either condescending or not so polite to her as a woman, because that's that sort of sweet spot of suburban women that the Democrats still don't quite have back, and they need to win the election.
Which is why she argued
to
have the mics open.
A lot of specific policy positions from Kamala Harris tonight.
Right, which is why Kamala argued to have the mics open, and also on the style over substance type of thing too, with just the setting up of this at ABC. They said that there's not going to be allowed any wandering around. They have to stay at their podiums. Let me ask you something, Todd, on the economy. A lot of Americans who have been polled over this last few months say that that's one of the number one issues for them. What will Harris do, do you think? What can she do to improve the economy? What can Trump do to improve the economy?
Right. Well, the economy is always the number one issue in every election. And the question is, how do you talk about the economy and what you're going to do? The aspects of the economy that are particularly problematic for Harris is inflation. Growth has been good. Unemployment has been good. But inflation has been bad. And the question is, how can she be tied to the Biden economy and Bidenomics? That's something Trump will certainly try to do. And she's going to need to talk about how she is going to make people's lives better. Elections are about the future, and you have to be able to say to people, this is how your life will be better under mine. You're going to get a $25,000 credit for, home buying is one of her new policies that she's just fleshed out. But the other aspect of this is, the more you talk about policy detail, the more people start getting concerned about cost and finding out whether or not it works for them. And you can alienate people getting into too much detail as well. And in terms of Donald Trump talking about the economy, he will, of course, talk about the economy under his administration and, call it the greatest economy we've ever had. Everything is hyperbole for him, of course. And he'll also talk about, the tariffs, which he likes to talk about. And he's also he's put out a few other ideas, but for the most part, it's been, when he's been on the campaign trail, it's been all tariffs.
Charlie, you want a quick respond to that?
No, I think that the economy is always going to be the issue. And, yes, Donald Trump's going to talk about the economy that he produced for the United States and what the level of inflation was when he left office versus what it became under the Bidenomics. But I do want to just real quickly go back to the immigration point, because as a legal immigrant myself, somebody who carried a green card and is a naturalized citizen, I can tell you that the vast majority of voters, including legal immigrants, are really, really upset over illegal immigration. That's a huge plus for Donald Trump. Regardless of what his language is, it is a huge plus for him, and it's a real problem for Kamala Harris, who opposed the border wall, et cetera, and went along with an awful lot of the policies of the Biden administration, which opened our borders to 10 million-plus illegal immigrants.
And now, Charlie, real quick before we join the debate itself, what about health? Former President Trump talked about replacing Obamacare, but has not been quite clear of what to replace it with. How important do you think that will be in this debate?
I don't think it's going to be a major item tonight. And where health care does come up, I think Kamala Harris is going to have to do a lot of explaining about why she supported Bernie Sanders' plan for single-payer health care. I think that's a much bigger issue at this point than the nuances of anything else.
I want to thank Wendy Schiller, political science professor at Brown University in Rhode Island, Yetunde Amede, professor of global affairs and politics at Farmingham State College in New York, and Charlie Giroux, a Republican strategist and Pennsylvania Republican delegate for many, many years, and Todd Belt, professor and director of George Washington University's Political Management Master's Program. I also want to thank VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman for talking to me a little earlier tonight about what's going on there in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Please stay tuned, because we will be talking again with our terrific analysts about how this debate went.
VOA. VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
If you're just joining us, we just heard an historic debate between U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. We've got VOA's Douglas Mpuga with me now here in the studio for a little post-debate analysis. Thanks, Douglas, for being here.
Hi, Caro.
Good to see you. So, Wendy Schiller, political science professor at Brown University in Rhode Island. Thanks for hanging on the line, Wendy, and sticking with us, listening to the debate. What were some of the highlights for you during tonight's debate?
Hello.
Hi, Wendy. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. The highlights for me tonight were really seeing how Trump reacted to Kamala Harris and whether Kamala Harris could sort of handle a lot of the rhetoric that Trump uses regularly. And, you know, to some extent, I think she did pretty well in a lot of categories. But, you know, the issues of inflation, the issues of border security, you know, these are still very important issues to the American people. And it's unclear to me that, you know, he didn't score points on that end. I think Trump was much less disciplined tonight than he was against Biden. He was really spot on against Biden and stuck to a script. In this one, he sort of rambled a little bit more than he did the last time. And it's unclear whether this performance will remind independent voters why they did not vote for Donald Trump in 2020.
Let's go to Professor Todd Belt. Professor, what were some of the big takeaways, as far as you're concerned, of the candidates' performances tonight?
Well, good to be back with you again. What I really noticed was Kamala Harris was really getting under Donald Trump's skin and causing him to go off on his sort of stream of consciousness rants more than usual. It was a real contrast. I mean, she seemed much more poised. She would prod him and you know say things like he was fired by 81 million Americans, and that obviously got under his skin. And she would like sit back and you know look like she was listening to a crazy person rant. And so I think she was really trying to create a difference there, really trying to create the message of going back to the past with Trump or moving forward with her, which is sort of that change motif that we heard earlier that a lot of voters are looking for. She did have some problems, of course, dealing with the inflation issue, but she got to some policy specifics towards the end. She was a little bit repetitive with, you know, trying to provide for people's dreams and hopes and joys, but I think for the most part, she did pretty well. Mm.
And just in case our listeners weren't with us at the top, that's Todd Belt, professor and director of George Washington University's Political Management Master's Program. Yetende Omede, she is professor of global affairs and politics at Farmingham State College in New York. How do you think Trump and Harris did on foreign policy?
I think Harris did a good job in explaining what her foreign policy stance is and talking about we need a new generation of leaders and what she would do regarding the Israel and Palestinian war and wanting to have a ceasefire immediately. And her actually also talking to the Palestinian people and saying that, you know, she understands their, you know, their outcry and also their rage and also advocating for a two-state solution.
And also pointing out, you know, they deserve self-determination.
And they deserve self-determination. And these are things that they have wanted the U.S. leader to actually say and be public about. So I think she was good in sort of talking about that point. I also think she was good in sort of leaning into this whole commander-in-chief role. I think that is something that we have seen and that is actually very important for her to sort of shine through. And I do agree with my other colleague who said that she seemed to be getting under Donald Trump's skin, right? So she would say certain things even about her foreign policy stance, but also throw digs at him. And those digs, unfortunately, he took bait in. And unfortunately, those are the things that sort of threw him off in his own rhetoric. So he was more so on the defensive side instead of being on the offense. And so she used that opportunity to really sort of hone in on some of her policies and where she wants the U.S. to go. She could have been a little bit more clearer, I think, but I think with the time that she had in answering the questions, I think she did a good job tonight.
Wendy, I want to throw it back to you, still on the same subject, because I want to ask you what you thought about Trump's response to that whole Israel-Hamas war when he said, when he was asked, how would you get the hostages out? And he said, if I were president, it would never have happened, and she hates Israel. And he said it twice. What did you make of all of that?
Well, I mean, I think there has been a concerted effort by the Republicans, and I think there's been responsiveness in the Jewish community to the Democratic Party's constituency base and their position on this conflict. And the Republicans have really been trying to get a greater percentage of Jewish support. And I think there's an alliance between the evangelical community and Israel, so shoring that up. So it was a political statement, and he was trying to use it to sort of score points. But he said that, too. He said also Ukraine, the Russian invasion of Ukraine wouldn't have happened if he was still president. And he just pushed the boundaries of what is sort of believable, right? I mean, he's, you know, his point is we shouldn't be spending money on foreign conflict. You know, that's going to resonate with a lot of Americans who are struggling with their own bills, asking why we're spending money across the world. So it's a good point for debate purposes, but he, you know, in associating with himself, like he could have prevented all the catastrophes in the whole world, and really, you know, touting a dictator in Hungary as his role model. I think, you know, this again, independent voters, if they watch tonight, you know, will be reminded of a Trump they haven't seen in a couple of years. This is the first time it really looks like the Donald Trump of old. And I think that's the question. You know, will that really swing them back to the Democratic Party?
Let's now go to Professor Todd Belt. Professor, immigration is a sticking issue and was a crucial point in this debate. In your assessment, who was more convincing on that issue?
Well, Donald Trump was very forceful, and he repeated this line that is this conspiracy about immigrants eating cats in Springfield, Missouri, and that was just unbelievable. And he wouldn't relent on that, even when he got fact-checked by the moderator.
Yeah, John Muir came back and said,
That was just astounding to me. He went down a really weird direction with that. And, you know, Kamala Harris, of course, she did have the job with, you know, finding the root causes of immigration. And she didn't really address that too much, but she did talk about, you know, the fact that she wants to strengthen the border. And Trump was, you know, responding with, well, you had the chance to do it. Why didn't you do it? And that led into the conversation about Trump scuttling the bipartisan bill that was being negotiated in the Senate. And I think she probably scored some points there, pointing out that he was against it because he thought it was a good issue for him. And, it, you know, for me as a political scientist, it sort of got under my skin when he said, well, she could just go down to the White House and sign a bill. Well, I mean, that's a confusion between an executive order and a bill, and there are different levels of authority and appropriations with, which go with each. But that's some inside politics there. But I think, you know, each really was speaking more to their constituency, particularly Trump to his. Mm. And I think Kamala Harris was trying to, you know, move away from that attack and trying to reset her position on it.
Yeah, and one of the things she said when you're talking about her response with the immigration, you know, argument, she pointed out very forcefully how she put criminals away, and you know, the bipartisan immigration bill that would have come up. She said, you know, he's the one that killed it. He told lawmakers, you know, he called them up by the phone and said, you know, kill it. I don't want this, because it came down to politics for him. And, you know, she made the point this country needs a leader and said that he'd rather run on a problem than fix it. Do you think she scored a point there, Todd?
Yeah, I think that was really, you know, it really led into her central theme, which is that Kamala Harris is saying that she's more of a leader for the entire country and Donald Trump is only out for himself. So I think that helped to underscore the greater theme that she was going after throughout the debate.
Okay. And Wendy, let's ask, just let's put it out there. Did either candidate, you talked about this pre-debate in our chat, did either candidate move the needle in your mind on important issues for Americans to win over undecided voters?
No, I don't think for the base, they both did perfectly fine for their base. I mean, Trump's base, you know, loves when he goes off, and they really eat it up. I think Kamala Harris's base would have been happy with her performance. There were no missteps, no mistakes. She was specifically geographic sometimes, like Arizona, John McCain. I think her answer to the Israeli-Gaza conflict probably helped with Michigan voters who were dissatisfied with Joe Biden on that issue. So it was clear that someone's scoring points was a really directed geographic effort to get more voters or people who have been disaffected back into the Democratic camp. So if anything, she probably moved the needle a little bit for herself with independent voters and disaffected Democratic voters.
Let's go to Yetunde now. Do you think Trump, let's talk about performance. Did you think Trump performed well by not being as aggressive as some people had thought he would be?
I think Trump, what he showcased is not a level of aggression, but it's a level of not being able to compose himself when she did make certain, you know, what we may call attacks on either his personality or his rhetoric, right? He took them as personal attacks instead of attacks towards his campaign or his policies. And I think that was the issue. And I think that's something she pointed out. And I think that's important when it comes to temperament, right? We need to talk more about temperament. Anytime we are looking at these political candidates, right, and they are, of course, going to level attacks. Some may be personal. Some may be against their policies. But it's how you choose to respond. It's how you choose to handle it. And it's how you choose to portray your temperament. And I think in this debate, he was not able to control his temperament in the way that I think would be suitable for the American people. Probably felt that was fine, but I think a temperament is actually needed when it comes to a lot of the policies that we're talking about, and I don't think that he held his own when it came to showcasing a temperament where he was easily distracted by things he felt were personal attacks to him, and I thought that was sort of a minus for his, you know, debate.
Let me ask Douglas. Okay. I think this is kind of the same thing you've got on your mind. And this is going to go out to all three of you. If you can just take each one of you, take like a minute, because we've only got about three more minutes. And you may not want to answer this question, but if you had to pick, who would you say is the winner tonight? And let's start with Wendy. To Todd. Todd, can you give me an answer to that?
Sure, yeah. I would say Harris was the winner tonight. What she really needed to do was show that she was up to the task, that she could take on Donald Trump, that she could be presidential, that she had stature, poise, and was, you know, strong enough to be commander-in-chief, especially her talk about foreign policy in that regard was really strong. And Trump was Trump. And I think that Kamala Harris did what she needed to do. She gave voters a legitimate option other than Donald Trump, which Biden didn't.
And Yetunde, what do you think?
I'm taking a nonpartisan look at it. I think Harris did a better job tonight. I think, like I said, I agree with my colleague. She seemed more presidential. She leaned into a lot of the policy areas that people wanted her to focus on and expound upon. I think her temperament was in a way that was leveled, right? And I think the American people were looking at the strike contrast and difference and how they answered questions where they felt they were either personally attacked and how they would lead and answer these questions and move on to the next question. I think she did a good job in that. So for me, in looking at it from a nonpartisan view, answering the policy question areas, rebutting and replying, you know, back to personal attacks, I think she did a much better job than President Trump tonight.
Okay, well, there you have it. That's about all the time that we have tonight. Our thanks go out to Wendy Scheller, the political science professor at Brown University in Rhode Island, Yetunde Omede. She is a professor of global affairs and politics at Framingham State College in New York. Charlie Giroux, who joined us at the top with the pre-debate analysis, is a Republican strategist in the battleground state of Pennsylvania. And Todd Belt, professor and director of George Washington University's Political Management Master's Program. And, of course, VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. We thank you, all of you, for joining us tonight. And on behalf of my co-hosts, Chinedu Afor and Douglas Mpuga, thank you for joining us tonight, too, in the studio.
Before we go, Carol, how, as far as you're concerned, how did you find that bit? Very entertaining, wasn't it?
I think so. I think that you know, some of the people said that they, you know, really don't know Kamala Harris. Well, tonight they had a chance to hear her.
She had a chance. Yeah, she had her chance to show herself to the world, and people were listening and watching. And I think she might have made an impression. Before we go, we have about 20 seconds left. The middle, this part is important, what they call not the bases of the parties. Mm. Those in the middle, those independents. Do you think anyone of them could have moved a bit, some of them?
Well, Todd, what do you think of that?
I think he has left us.
Were there some independents who were moved?
Yes.
I think possibly. I think perhaps some of those, even some of those moderate Republicans who are looking at Nikki Haley as an alternative to Donald Trump might be scraped off and put into the other column. I think some independents might see that, you know, they really do have a choice. It's not the choice between Biden and Trump anymore, and Kamala Harris is on the scene, and she is a legitimate
All right.
alternative.
Todd Thank gets you. The last word. On behalf of Chinedu Afor and Douglas Mpuga, thanks for joining us tonight. You are listening to The Voice of America.